Today's program has been brought to you by TechServe, New York's original and still the best Apple computer, iPod, and iPhone store and repair shop. For more information, visit TechServe.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
What's up, everyone? Derek Evers, Chris Robbins here with another urgent episode of Nothing Urgent.
Man, today's show is really good.
We do have a very good show today. We're joined today by Marissa Paternoster of Screaming Female / Noun. I say / Noun because she's on tour currently as a solo project, Noun. And Joe Steinhardt, who is the owner of Don Giovanni Records, the label that Screaming Females is on, and he's also touring as Modern Hunt, a solo record he put out, Modern Hut. Hut, not hunt.
I think Modern Hunt.
I know that's
got hunting on the brain.
That might be a good band, and we're gonna have to drop that later and be like, hey, what about a pseudonym name? Or maybe we should just start a band called Modern Hunt and try to
muscle him out of the Modern Hunt / Hut game. Hustle.
And after that, we'll be joined by Jesse Gaddis, the owner of Bedford Slims, an e-cigarette company based here in Brooklyn. Thus the name.
We're talking about e-cigarettes because Mayor Bloomberg is quietly trying to ban a lot of them from New York City in this new legislation. So, interesting things afoot in the electronic cigarette world.
We are now joined by Marissa and Joe. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing very well.
Welcome to our what are we? What are
lair.
We yeah, our Monaco lair. So you guys are on tour.
Yep.
And finishing it up soon, I think. This is kind of near the end, right?
Yeah, we have 3 days left about.
And what do you? I know you guys are playing Death by Audio tonight, but what's your the rest of your? You guys heading home?
No, then we go down to DC, and then we play Philadelphia.
So this is kind of like you're backtracking, or were you coming from the north? Were you coming from like Boston or something like that?
The tour has kind of been like all over the back and forth a lot. I know you can't see gestures on the radio, but yeah, it hasn't really been like linear. It's been a lot of back and forth. So we were in Ithaca, Burlington, New Hampshire, New Jersey. Now we're up here, then we're going back down again. So
we'll explain a little bit to our listeners. Obviously, they're probably familiar with Screaming Females, but Joe, you run Don Giovanni Records.
Mm-hmm.
And Marissa, you've kind of, aside from Screaming Females, you also have a solo project under Noun, correct?
That is correct.
So then,
she's reading cue cards, by the way. We're holding up the cards and she's reading them.
But yeah, so I figured today would be kind of like a family chat.
Cool.
So, like, I guess fill us in a little bit. Doing impos, we've worked with Don Giovanni for a long time. You guys are a label that we respect a lot. We're very I wouldn't say socially conscious. What's the word I'm looking for? Where we respect the way you do business is the word I'm trying to say. I don't know how that what the big word for that is. There's got to be. Come on, editor man, you should fill me in.
What for just respecting people? I'm not sure if there's a fancy $20 word for that.
But why don't you give us a little background of how it started and like kind of why you started the label and
yeah. I'll try to make it a short story and not sure how far back we want to go, but basically, I grew up in the Jersey area. I was going to a lot of shows in New Brunswick and I really liked the bands, and there didn't seem to be a lot of labels that were actually putting out their music. And so, when I went to college, no one knew about the bands that I thought were like the best bands, basically, because they didn't really have records, or if they had records, they weren't well distributed. And then I also had always wanted to kind of put out my own record. And then I met my friend Zach. We did a band together, and we put out a record together. And then some of our other friends in bands kind of asked us to help with theirs because we had actually got a record to exist. And for the first couple of years, we were just trying to get records to exist. And it wasn't until about the 8th release, I think, that we decided... No, sorry, the 12th release, I think, that we decided that we were going to try to actually do more than just make the records exist. And now we just keep trying to do more and more for our bands, but also keep things sort of with our ethics and the way we want to kind of do things and stuff like that.
Where does the name come from?
The name comes from the movie Dirty Work. It's a Norm Macdonald Bob Saget directed 1998 film.
It's a classic.
I'm familiar with the work. I'm very familiar with the work.
It's also like a world famous opera. It's like a world famous Italian, like a timeless piece of art. Not dirty work.
People seem to think it's Don Corleone a lot. Like they mix. They seem
Corleone?
To think
Corleone.
Every time I say Don Giovanni, people are like, "Oh, I'll make you an offer you can't refuse." And I'm like, "No, that's Don. That's Don Corleone. Don Giovanni is an opera, which is referenced in Dirty Work."
I love that movie.
Which portion of the movie is it referenced in?
Well, so a part of the plot is that one of the characters, played by Christopher McDonald, wants to revive or build an opera house over some people's residential houses. He's a big opera fan, and the big opera they're going to show is Don Giovanni. And me and Zach were just watching it, and we were like, let's just call the band let's call the label Don Giovanni Records. And we didn't think we'd be writing that name on anything else other than the 1/7 inch. And so, you know. But it sounds cool. Like it. But there's no significance.
Your label, the label name is similar to the band Diarrhea Planet, and then it taught me how to spell Giovanni correctly.
Planet is a pretty tough.
I actually meant diarrhea.
Oh, sorry.
Spaghetti is another word like that. I have a problem with spaghetti. There's like H's in there that you know are silent. Anyway, so what was the 12th release that kind of spawned that concept?
That was a band called the Ergs, and they were a popular band at the time, and we did an LP with them for the same reason that we couldn't really, no one else sort of wanted to do the record on vinyl at the time, and at the time we were sort of, our thoughts were we'll just do records for bands that couldn't get things to exist. That was our 8th release, and then they had this 12-inch EP, and another label was talking to them about doing the record. And at first we were like, oh yeah, that's cool, we don't have to do it, and it'll still exist, and we can still buy it. And then me and Zach were taking the bus down from Boston to the Knitting Factory, the old Knitting Factory, to see the Unlovables, Steinways, Bennett of Shape, and maybe the Erics played also. I'm trying to remember, but a legitimate pop-punk showcase of sorts. And I think, and either way, we were just on that bus just talking and stuff, and we were like, what if we just tried to do that, ask them if they would let us do that record, but we try to do it the same way that, like, more legitimate label would do it. And we just, like, then we'll try to do more than just make it exist. We'll promote it, and we'll do more stuff for it. And so we called them, like, from the bus, because we were, like, really excited and probably kind of drunk. And they were like, yeah, that sounds good. And so that was the impetus to sort of start taking things more seriously. And the next, actually, time we took it up another level was with Marissa's band, Screaming Females. It was a similar thing where we sort of were like, if we want to do this band that's more of a real band, we need to either not do it or figure out a way to do what a sort of real label could do. We sort of promised them all these things that we had no idea if we actually could do. But we were like, yeah, well, you know, and then we somehow maybe did them. I don't know.
Yeah, well, while we're on the family explanation here, why don't, Marissa, can you tell us a little bit how you guys got started with Don Giovanni?
Yeah.
As Chris goes to the bathroom off to the corner.
That was very loud. I'll just pee in this
that
bucket.
That was a very short pee. Joe came, he tagged along with us for a couple one-off shows. I didn't know who he was. I didn't really pay a lot of attention to him. Jarrett, our drummer, told us that Joe was coming, and I was like, okay. And I don't remember. I think the first time Joe was in the van with us, we played some show in New Haven. And I remember it was, like, pouring rain, and I didn't know why he was there or who he was. And I think I kept forgetting his name. And then the second time I met up with him, he came to see us at the end of, like, some gigantic tour in Washington, D.C., and he was courting us. I felt like he was, like, my gentleman caller. This was like, the glass menagerie.
Was it one of those sleazy record label...
yeah, he was wearing a polyester suit.
Well, he just told you he was promising things that he didn't know he could deliver, so, you know...
I don't know what he said to Jarrett because I went to sleep before they started talking about any
That's
of
true,
this
yeah.
stuff.
It's a good thing you didn't hear because the fur
I'm
coats
sure
that you were supposed to be had, you're supposed to have by now.
Joe is nothing except a completely reasonable fella. Anyway,
she says with a sigh.
Yeah, at that point we had already put out our first two records by ourselves, and not too many labels had asked us to work with them. I think like one or two, and the people who would, like, approach screaming females always just wound up being kind of, like, gross, you know. they made a lot of, they weren't, like, earnest, they made a lot of, like, empty promises. You know, it's, like, things I know you can't do. And also, I don't, like, at that point, we didn't need them, because we already knew how to put out our own records, and we already knew how to, like, save, you know, we were good at, like, saving our money and planning our own tours and stuff. So when Joe showed up, we were, like, kind of skeptical as to whether or not we should even bother getting involved with someone else. But Joe was the first person who actually was aware of the fact that we did know how to put out our own records.
Right,
and
right.
We did know how to, like, manage our own finances, and we didn't need to be, like, babysat, essentially. And he was like, so I just, he was basically like, I know you guys know how to take care of yourselves, let me help you do more. And so that's why we decided to go with Don Giovanni, aside from the fact that they're also from, like, our city.
Well, that's the other thing I want to talk about, because you touched on it a little bit about the Erg show, but, you know, when I think of Jersey, especially, you know, pre-now, anytime in the past, I don't know, you generally have a connotation of, like, pop punk, or, like, a lot of the, like, emo, screamo stuff that was popular around the state. It was, like, Long Island and New Jersey were always putting out, like, those screamo bands. But it seems like the stuff that you're putting out kind of has its own sort of sound that was, I'm assuming, existed at the same time. Like you said, didn't necessarily have a distribution outlet. Do you guys find yourself, were you guys fans of those types of music growing up? I mean, I was a huge pop punk fan, so I'm not.
Oh, yeah, I love, that's like, that's, I still, that's like a lot of what I listen to, is those New Jersey bands, or a lot of Lookout Records pop punk bands. So there were a lot of those from California, but also bands like Weston and stuff like that, and Digger, who are from Pennsylvania.
Well, it's interesting about your solo album, which we will, is it a solo album?
I know, yeah, it's modern. I mean, Marissa plays on it, but it's essential. But I would call it a solo album, probably, right?
Okay, yeah. Well, let me, before, what do you play on the record? Not to,
I play like 4 guitar notes on it.
Okay, so most of the guitar notes are him.
Yeah, Joe wrote all the songs.
Okay,
I just.
Anything that required more talent than strumming chords, though Marissa did. But I would sometimes be like, play something here, you know. And then said, but, like, you know.
So you could have just done that. I have a dream of doing a mouth hardcore record where I just do all hardcore songs, but, like, I make all the instrument noises with my mouth.
Oh, like Bobby McFerrin style. Oh, yeah, Judd Jett. Yeah.
They did it?
Yeah,
pioneered in Florida.
Everybody.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
2 7-inches.
It's okay.
Well, your record, the Modern Hunt record, reminds me a lot of the Ben Weasel solo album.
Fidativi?
Yeah.
Or, because there's 2 Ben Weasel solo albums.
Yeah, well, that's
it. Yeah.
Sonically, I would say.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. I'm a huge Fidativi fan. I feel weird saying anything positive about Ben Weasel right now, but
after the South by Southwest thing.
Well, yeah, and then some other things around that same time.
I'm sure, like, there was horrible things leading up to.
Yeah, there was a bunch of stuff leading up to that also. But at the same time, like, before all that happened, I Fidativi was a really good record.
What's a Fidativi?
It's like some spiritual thing. You know, that's what it's called.
Oh.
Yes, but, well, at least you don't have Ben Weasel lyrics tattooed on your body. So
that's true. What do you have?
Say it.
I don't like to tell people what my horrible tattoos are.
You have so many good ones.
My brain hurts.
No, if it was that, it would be a little bit too cliche. It was either the, you know, because I was like, oh, I could do that, or I could do the weasel.
Yeah, you're stalling.
I know. Next topic. No, it says I don't think I want to be subject to your morality.
That's pretty cool.
So that's from Television City Dream, which is one of their later. Less, you know, popular in terms of.
Oh no, we respect Television City Dream a lot at the Don Giovanni compound.
Yeah, I love that album. But anyway, we'll move on because Marissa's shaking her head.
She doesn't like pop punk very much at all.
So okay, then what were you? I mean, I'm bringing this up. I know I hate the, like, what were you influenced by question, but I'm trying to make this Jersey centric. So, like, you're growing up in Jersey.
Yeah.
What are you listening to?
Well, I didn't know anything about
a lot of the Boss and, like, you know.
Yeah, of course. I didn't know anything about basement shows. I grew up in Elizabeth, which is actually really close to New Brunswick, but I didn't. There was no way of.
Home of IKEA.
Yes, the infamous home of IKEA. And
Brooklyn is now,
I know,
too, though.
You guys
so.
Have your own, thank God. I didn't know anything about house shows, and there definitely weren't any, like, DIY shows happening in Elizabeth. Or maybe they were, and I just wasn't privy to them. I don't know. I was kind of, like, a recluse. And even if there were, I probably wouldn't have gone.
I think they were actually, like, in the basement of IKEA. Like, you know how they have one of those rooms?
No, no, because I hung out at IKEA a lot.
Big fan of Swedish meatballs?
No, like, Mike from Screaming Females and I, we would just, like, idle in the IKEA. Just, like, you know, pick up the fake television sets and stuff. We're like, what are you going to do? I'm 16.
There were tough guy metal shows, definitely. I think I definitely saw Bulldoze play in
E-Town.
E-Town are from there, Elizabeth. But I've never seen them in E-Town.
But, I didn't know that shows existed, and even if I have known, I wouldn't have gone because I was scared of absolutely everything. So everything I knew about punk came from the internet, and like very slowly over a 56K modem. And when I was like 14, I got really in. I discovered like, you know, Kill Rock Stars or something, and then I started listening to like a lot of Riot Girl and K Records stuff and Chainsaw stuff and Mr. Lady stuff, and then aside from that, like your prototypical like 14-year-old rocker, I was like, you know, like Pearl Jam and Nirvana and Hole and Smashing Pumpkins and stuff.
Do
like
you find
that.
It odd that now those songs are played on classic rock radio stations?
No.
I just think that's so
weird.
Because
by the time I like Smashing Pumpkins, they had already been broken up for like almost a decade.
And the best part, isn't it weird that the best part of every band is always the dude that does heroin, and then he like leaves because he's too much of a junkie to play anymore, and then they become not as good?
I'm planning on doing that like any second now.
Well, I mean, you are. I mean, no offense to the other members, but I mean, I think if you left because of a heroin addiction, I think that's what people would say too. Is like, man, she was the best part of that band, and then she had to go get all junked up.
Yeah, that's why I'm gonna do it.
All right, well, let's go. I'll have to remember that in my daily life. Does that apply? Like, if I'm working at an office, and I'm just like, man, I don't get enough respect. No. I think I'm going to start doing heroin.
No.
No, not at all.
No, heroin is not a respectful drug to joke about. We should not joke about that. I'm just thinking about, what was the drummer from
Smashing Pumpkins? Jimmy Chamberlain. Yeah.
And then Jonathan Melvoin was the keyboardist who died in the hotel room with Jimmy Chamberlain.
Yep. Canceled the New York show, but luckily I saw the Philly show 2 days before.
It's not fair.
So, okay, now we've set this time and place. You guys are both, you know, young, upcoming. Well, you're making music. You're putting out music.
Yeah.
He courted you. You guys put out a record. Uh-huh. Screaming Female sort of takes off at that point.
Yep.
Now, what was the impetus behind Noun? Like, why did you want it? Are you just, like, tired of all the carrying the weight of other people around?
No, I started... Solo's
we're taping behind the music.
I started, recording under that... Is it alias?
Moniker.
It's moniker.
The word you're looking
for. Noun, way before I knew Jarrett, and Mike and I had just started becoming friends. And I didn't have bandmates. I knew I could play the guitar, and I knew I could sing, but I was, like I said, I was just really shy. And so I recorded all of these songs by myself. When I was, like, 16, I lived with my grandma on my dad's, like, computer, his work computer. And then I used to sometimes send my songs to, like, my best friend in high school, because she was, like, the only person I'd ever tell anything to.
Felt comfortable enough.
And she was like, ah, like, this doesn't suck. And I was like, oh, okay, that's good, because, you know, you're a good friend. You're a good friend to me. I knew you wouldn't lie to me. And so gradually, like, Mike and I became friends in high school, and we started a really cruddy band called Surgery on TV. And,
Then Sergio on TV?
Surgery on TV.
Oh, surgery, okay.
Sergio on TV is very sad. Like, that's exotic.
It's, yeah, that is.
Very sassy. I've never stopped, like, recording as Noun, and only recently began playing as Noun.
So do you record, when you record Noun, is it with Mike then? Or were you...
Mike did play on the first... It's basically, like, whoever might want to come stop by if I am recording a record, which I haven't done in a while anyway, if I am making a record and somebody, usually it's like a New Brunswick musician or like a New Brunswick centric musician, wants to like stop by and do something, you know, I'm more than happy to like accommodate them, because
if they're able to play the part.
Yeah, unless they're Joe, in which case he's like completely and totally useless. But like,
so what part were you? What part were you asked to play?
A scratch guitar track that I wasn't able to play.
He like couldn't play it. It was four chords. But yeah, so I.
So buy the new Modern Hunt record.
Yeah,
yeah, awesome. Exactly. Yeah.
Very cohesive. It's prodigious playing, singing.
Well, so, I want to throw it out there. If you need any like mouth hardcore parts,
Chud.
Oh man, Chud.
Chug.
I'm all about the palm mutes.
Yeah.
I grew up in Buffalo, so we had a Snapcase and all the like hardcore.
Oh yeah, Snapcase has one good song.
They have a lot of good
Zombie
songs.
Zombie Prescription.
I like that one.
That's a good song.
Well, see, the first album. Well,
that's the only one I know. Too.
The dude that the drummer was in Slugfest before that, which kind of evolved into the singer is now in Terror. But the drummer was like really good, and he's what made them. But they were like around for a long time before that.
Scott Vogel used to have some legitimate talent.
Yeah, but not anymore.
Terror just went in this weird direction. I guess it's popular. But
I want you to make gym shorts for my band.
I like the Terror demo, the 7-inch or whatever, the first CD EP probably.
Yeah, well, the Slugfest I was super into. Like I'll still jam that today and be like, this could hold up.
Yeah. Does hold
up. And Looking Glass Elf, the album you're talking about with, that's also got that song Harrison Bergeron, which I rock a lot.
I downloaded it off Napster in 2000.
Napster, that's like kicking at LimeWire.
Yeah, I had LimeWire. And Kazaa.
Starring Shaquille O'Neal.
That was cool.
No, that was Shazam, wasn't
it? Oh, yeah, or Kazam or something.
Shazam. I don't know. The excellent actor, Shaquille O'Neal.
Never saw it.
So
one of my favorite actors.
We'll come back to music really quickly. We got about 5 or 10 more minutes really quick. But and then we'll be joined by Jesse.
The mysterious Jesse.
Mysterious Jesse. So, I just want to bring this up while we're on the air. I don't want to like change direction or anything like this. But are you a baseball fan by any chance?
Hell no.
Did you know that me and Joe have a little inside history that we were in the same fantasy baseball league?
Yeah, we were talking about it on the way here. It was so boring.
Yeah, who gives a shit?
I don't know.
Chris equally hates sports.
It's fucking fantasy. You even say that it's fantasy.
He was on the phone with someone. He was like, Richard traded Tony, and Tony's really mad about the trade.
This thing, all this stuff that's not real.
He's going to get over it. And I was just like,
wait, what team are you?
I'm trying to remember what Tony and Joe's Seafood, or is that a different league? I'm in a couple different leagues, but
wait, we traded with you.
I think so.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll just give everyone a little context.
You're losing
here.
Listeners by the second.
Marissa might be right.
Hammer-jing. Hammer-jing.
This will be 2 minutes long. But
I'd rather give betting predictions for next year's football season if everyone's ready. I'm ready to speak.
If you
want to
lose more listeners, I can tell you about my menstrual flow this month or something.
That might actually get listeners back though.
This was heavy as hell.
And I think that might have to be the end of our fantasy baseball talk. Just the point I want to make is that the end of our trade deadline was 2 days ago, and I thought it was kind of funny.
No, that's where the drama. What's
funny
about
that?
Well, not funny, but we made a trade.
Not amusing.
We made a trade and got a couple good players.
There's some serious drama around that trade deadline that we may have to talk. May have to turn the mics off. If we want to discuss. Okay. We want to discuss some of that drama. People are playing games.
Oh, that's what that's all about. It's about your new blood. So like people.
I don't like it, man.
Yeah, you get used to it. Tough skin.
Yeah, we'll see.
Anyway, let's bring it back to something Marissa's like really not enjoying herself right now.
I'm out.
She's checked out once it gets to baseball talk. Normally we play a game about the people that are eating pizza in front of us called Who's Winning This Date, but I don't think they're on a date. I know I don't know. This came up last time.
Why can't they be on a date?
Well,
because one of them was stuffing prosciutto in her mouth at an incredible rate that you wouldn't. I don't think you do on a date.
Maybe
I think it's
they're
two
in
friends.
A long. T- maybe.
And one of them has a rock, and so like
I don't think I do that with my wife. I would not stuff prosciutto like the way that she was doing.
I don't
it
feel.
Was, like,
I don't feel very comfortable as a queer person. I don't feel very comfortable in this environment right now.
we should let our listeners know who can see what we're talking about. There are two women sitting in front of us eating
and
pizza.
They're on
one of whom was formerly literally like stuffing prosciutto by the handful
maybe
into her mouth.
Maybe they're
married. I feel like if you're eating like a slick meat like that,
no,
that's probably
fork,
the way to eat it.
But not with a fork.
I would
like,
stuff prosciutto
just stuffing
in front of,
it in.
And in my mouth in front of my girlfriend.
I don't think
she'd
I would
like
in
it.
Front of my wife, let alone a date
yes,
or anything.
Yes, you would.
I would not.
You wear Adidas shorts in front of your wife.
It's true.
God.
All right, we got to do a 360 away from prosciutto eating
okay,
really
yeah,
quick.
Yeah.
So let's take it. Okay. Now, what should we? Okay, the you know generic. What should we expect? Next question. But I think there are a lot of people that are you know like what do you guys have both on the table from both of you guys? We'll start screaming female / noun. What's your plans moving forward?
Noun is going to continue doing whatever it wants to do. I never have plans for it, but...
I usually just tell her, like, Marissa, make another record, yeah, and then she does.
My friend Mark and I, who is a New Brunswick... he's a New Brunswick fixture.
Luminary?
Yeah. He and I have been recording a record, which is pretty much done. So maybe it'll come out. I don't know. Who knows?
And what's that? Is that Noun?
Yeah, Noun record. And then Screaming Females finished record... Well, no, we didn't finish recording anything. I don't know why I said that. Screaming Females are done, pretty much done writing, I guess, sixth record? I don't know. Yeah, a record. And right now we're trying to figure out like when and where we will record it. But mostly we've been focusing on getting back to touring full-time because I was sick for most of the year.
So when was the last Screaming Females tour then?
Fairly recently, but it was short. Like, we're used to going on tours for, like, you know, like tours. A month. Not monument, you know, but, like, longer than 2 weeks. So the last one we went on was 2 weeks, and it was good. Everything went well, so we're going to keep ramping it up until it's kind of back to normal and doing full-time.
And really quick, while we're on the topic of the forthcoming record, is there are there any special guests on the record that we should be aware of?
No, we don't do that.
Well, but you've guested with other people, correct?
Yeah. No, have I? Oh, you mean, like, is Garbage going to be on the record?
No, I don't mean Garbage per se, but you've worked with, you know, who have you... I mean, didn't you play with Jack White as well?
No.
No?
One time I
Screaming Females, like, played with
Jack
White,
right? One
time
he walked over towards me at a dinner table and said something. I don't know what
happened. That's like Chris's with the girl from Weeds. That's like your interaction from her.
Mary Louise Parker?
Yeah.
From Boys on the Side? That's Joe and I's movie.
Yeah, it is.
That's our movie.
Wait,
is she better than in Weeds? I love Weeds, but her character is slightly insufferable on that show.
What did Jack White say to you?
I don't know.
I look like Michael Jackson these days.
Yeah,
I think that's what he said. Something to that effect.
He was nice.
I thought it was Michael Jackson.
Remember anything he said?
He didn't know it was Jack White when I met him.
He's tall.
Tall Michael Jackson.
Yeah, he does kind of look a little bit like MJ.
Do you think that, like, people that are tall have a generally, like... I feel like that might be part of the reason why he's popular is because he's a tall guy. It's like the same thing with...
I'm well-liked.
It's like you're listening to his music. It's like, damn, this guy's tall.
No, but I mean, really, like, you know, you carry a sense of, you know, presence when you're a tall guy. It's like, who's the guy from Detroit?
Napoleon?
Like, half rapper, white guy with long hair.
You're being a sizist right now, I don't feel I feel very uncomfortable as a short
woman. I tell him that all the time.
Woman.
Maybe it's just because I feel insecure as, like, average. I'm, like, average across the board, so it's like I just, like, meld into the crowd. You know,
you have some very unique lyrics tattooed on you. You are a special snowflake.
Yeah, but no one sees it. No one sees the homemade alien on me either. So.
Oh no.
He has a lot of good ones.
And by good, he means none of them cost more.
We should get Morgan Freeman in here to, like, read descriptions of your tattoos. Just, like, get you to strip down, and then he, like, talks about them.
We really need to get some sponsors in order to pull that off.
It'd be cool if you just got naked in here.
Do it, Derek, do it! I would do it, but our listeners wouldn't see it, and it would lose all... and there's also little kids.
So?
This is like little kids' hour.
Yep.
They're naked all the time.
God, there's so many jokes about me being naked with naked kids that I can't
We should probably move on from that topic.
Back to Michael Jackson.
Oh, brother.
What? Yeah.
So, and then, okay, Modern Hut then.
Yep.
Okay, so this is, I knew you were touring, but, so what's the next, are you going to continue recording?
Yeah, I spent a ridiculously long amount of time on this last record, and I'm going to try to spend less on the next one. I already have a couple of songs, and I want to try to record it, soon. You know, this last one I literally probably spent, like, 6 years on, recorded it 3 or 4 times. And it's not a masterpiece, it just took a long time to, it's not like I spent all this time and I painted, like, the Sistine Chapel.
Is it Don Giovanni's Don Giovanni?
No, it is not even our Don, it is like, you know.
Is your Don Corleone?
I'm trying to think if I can throw out, like, a shitty opera, and, like, I can't, I'm not classy
enough. It's like Rent.
Whoa, no, Rent is not shitty.
I actually saw Rent, it's like one of, like, 4 musicals I've seen.
It's like Stomp.
It's like Stomp. This is like our Stomp.
Yeah,
this is,
now
it'll make
Simpsons
money.
Reference.
I know it's not an opera, but
it's like Rent or Stomp. Or
people
Clomp.
Laugh at Stomp, but people still fucking see it.
It's like Blue Man.
Day.
It's like one of the longest standing New York City institutions, and they're dudes painted blue.
Yeah.
I would love to see the Blue
Man. You've never seen him?
No.
People get angry because they get dirty when they're in there. Like, people throw things, and then they're like, "I didn't realize I was going to get splattered with glow in the dark stuff that washes off."
Sounds fun as hell.
I think I'm the only one that's gone to Blue Man.
Yeah,
it's probably true.
So, okay, then okay, and then what's next on the horizon for Don Giovanni? What do you guys have coming out next?
So, coming out almost immediately, other than Modern Hell, which just came out, we have Kicking Spit, which is a band that Mark is in, who's Marissa was just talking about. Then in October, November, around then, we have the Upset record, which I'm really excited for. It's Allie, who's from New Brunswick, but she lives in the West Coast now, and she started a band, and they're really, really good. And then we have Warriors, which is Lauren from The Measure, her solo band. I don't know what to call it, but it's a band.
Right.
But I think she writes everything for it. And they're actually, she's playing tonight solo at the show. And then basically next year, all of our bands are doing new things, including actually we have Miranda from Black Wine sitting here. And Black Wine are apparently doing a new record next year, which I'm really excited for. And I think Brick Mower, basically...
Miranda's here. We just told her not to say anything. Like, that's against the rules. Like, yeah. You're not allowed to
She's
talk.
In the corner with, like a ski mask on.
Yeah, we prod her every now and then and throw water at her.
But basically, yeah, like, all... I think almost all of our bands are doing new releases, and then, yeah, it should be pretty cool.
Excellent.
Cool.
Well, guys, I want to thank you very much for coming by. I know you guys got a hectic schedule, and, you know, nearing the end of the tour, you guys are probably, you know...
Yeah, it wasn't a long... It was an easy tour, relaxing.
Slept in my bed last night.
Yeah.
That's a nice thing to have, right? You know, and do you guys now, like, since you've been touring a lot, do you have people in pretty much every city that you can chill with, or do you guys still do it kind of the more, you know...
Yeah, almost every city. I mean, there are a lot of places where we still haven't made friends. Still working on it.
But you stay with Jack White when you're in Tennessee, right?
No.
Does he even live there?
I did get to stay in his hotel room once, and it was really nice.
I think you'll be there. I think Screaming Females will be staying in a hotel like that.
The biggest bed ever.
Yeah,
he's a tall man. I mean,
he is bigger than a queen.
Do you know that Abe Lincoln, when he was shot, he wasn't big enough on the bed that they laid him on, so they had to lay him crooked?
Oh my God. Where the hell did you hear that?
They tell you when you go. No, you go when you go visit the Ford Theater, and then they take you on that tour. They tell you that.
Anyway, has been historical inaccuracies with Derek and Chris.
Derek assumes. No, I want to thank you guys very much for coming by. Like I said, you know, we at Impose and myself personally, we're very we're big fans of you guys. We love the ethics that you guys instill in your records and the way you do things, even as you grow more and more popular. So.
Likewise.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, and thank you again. And I'm going to take people out. I gotta log back into the old electronic box here.
You're knocking down the fourth wall. Stop. It's putting a record on the turntable.
I'm trying to figure out. Yes, that's what I'm doing. So should I take? We're going to play two songs. One by Noun, Outer Space, and one by Modern Hut, Life. Kind of life in outer space. I'm trying to. So which one do you think I should play first? I feel like the Modern Hut I should play first because as a talk show is kind of like NPR type of vibe.
That's coming out. That's the new release.
It's a hot new release.
Wait, it's not out yet?
No, it's out like Tuesday, last Tuesday.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Hot new release.
Hot new release. This is Life by Modern Hut, guys. Thank you again.
Thank you,
yes.
Proud of the things that I've done in this life, but that's alright, 'cause I will die. Yeah, I will die.
I'm not proud of the things that I've done in this life, but that's alright, 'cause I will die.
That we need the most sleep, but I stayed up all night counting quarters and nickels and dimes.
It's nights like these are the blankets and the sheets don't provide the warmth I need to get by.
That I've done in this life, but that's alright, 'cause I will die. voices in my brain gets me by the days like these when I'm inside.
The money I owe to the people I can't look in the eye gets me by the days like
that I've done in this life, but that's alright, cause I will die, yeah I will die.
I'm not proud of the things that I've done in this life, but that's alright, cause I will die, yeah I will die.
That was Outer Space by Noun, and before that, Life by Modern Hut. So we had a very nice conversation with Marissa Paternoster from Screaming Female / Noun, and Joe Steinhardt from the label Don Giovanni and solo record Modern Hut. Now we're going to go in a slightly more cancerous direction.
Well, that's not true, Derek.
It is not true. but we are we're joined by Jesse Gaddis, who is the founder and owner of Bedford Slims, which is an independent e-cigarette company based here in Brooklyn. Jesse, are you there?
Yes. I wouldn't say it's slightly more cancerous than what you guys were doing before, but yeah, that makes sense.
So I would like, before we get started, I want Chris to explain. Chris wrote an article yesterday on Gothamist about basically new legislation that Mayor Bloomberg is trying to enact in New York regarding e-cigarettes. So, Chris, why don't you just give us a little background and before we get to hammering away with Jesse here.
There's three bills that are pending before the City Council here in New York City. The first would raise the tobacco age to 21. The second would ban advertising of cigarettes and tobacco products in convenience stores and bodegas. And the third one would bar the use of coupons with cigarettes and create this like price floor for $10.50 for every pack of cigarettes, and it does some other stuff. But in the language of these bills, they've inserted, and by they, Mayor Bloomberg has inserted this language that specifically bans flavored electronic cigarettes along with other flavored tobacco products. Potentially, you know, banning electronic cigarettes for a lot of people who use them already, the flavored kinds, that is. So this is obviously a concern for people who have quit smoking and who are now using electronic cigarettes, or people who just think it's sort of messed up that the mayor can just insert this legislation at his own whim without any real sound science behind it.
And what is his reasoning? Is it because he feels that those it's marketing towards children with the flavors?
The reasoning is right, and that is with tobacco companies that has traditionally been true. If you look at the numbers of who's buying flavored tobacco products, it's, you know, they're marketed towards adolescents and youth. With e-cigarettes, though, there's no good data that shows this, though. And, you know, there's no good data all around for whether or not they're harmful to your health or whether or not they're, you know, potentially cancer-causing. Probably not, but most people think they're healthier than combustible cigarettes. So
really quick, before we ask a few questions to Jesse, are e-cigarettes, this might be a good question for Jesse, but are e-cigarettes, is there an age limit now? Are they considered on the same
laws
as cigarettes?
New York State, it's 18.
So it's similar. It's basically cigarettes. Okay.
Correct.
Excuse me. So, okay. So, Jesse, I know Bedford Slim's, one of your major components is different flavors. Now, being being an independent company, I think it's an interesting take having you on the air because, you know, there's obviously the larger companies that have lines of e-cigarettes. But you as an independent, I mean, this has got to be slightly like scary territory for you, is it not?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because we just bumped our flavor lineup by like four more flavors. So we were at four, which is, you know, minimal, you know, in some regards, but still a decent offering. But now we're up to eight, and to see, you know, them slash it down to just two or three flavors tops is kind of, you know... I would just like to see a little more evidence first, you know, of any of this being marketed towards children and, you know. So, yeah, it would definitely be hurtful to us for sure.
Jesse, if I can ask you, what made you think that you wanted to start an e-cig company? Like, when did that idea occur to you?
The idea occurred to me just as I was leaving my one position as a creative director at this startup tech company. I was actually given an e-cigarette from a friend of mine. His cousin had started a company upstate New York called Vapor King, and it was interesting for me. I just had never seen anything quite like it, nor had heard anything about it. The thing about the product, though, that I saw was wrong with it was just that, you know, it was kind of tacky. It seemed, and I'm not saying Vapor King now looks bad or anything like that, but what I'm saying is the initial kind of disposable thing that they had out looks really bad and tasted awful, if I can say. And I just thought that, you know, given kind of the skill set that I had and the people that I was, you know, friends with and working with, I felt that maybe we could kind of make it cool, you know, and something interesting that someone who may never even try an e-cigarette would pick up at the store and say, you know what, today's the day I try to maybe cut down on smoking or make the switch to e-cigarettes.
You just made like
that's really
15.
How it started.
You just made like 15 tobacco control people faint when you said you wanted to make it cool just now.
Yeah. Oh, there's no doubt about it.
But what would you say to them? That, what, like their argument is like, why perpetuate this like whole, you know, this whole act of smoking, this whole putting this thing to your mouth and exhaling stuff. And this thing that turns on in our lizard brains that makes it cool. Like, why perpetuate that?
Why perpetuate that? It just seemed at the time that, and still going forward, I mean, I still get this, you know, kind of lesson from smokers all the time that it's not cool. And sure, you can say that, but, you know, the thing is, like, what also isn't cool is cancer and dying. So, you know,
I can second
right
that.
When I started putting this thing together that, you know, it may save more lives. It may not be as cool as smoking, let's face it. But at the same time, let's at least try to dress this thing up and have a go at it, you know? And also, just the terminology and the visuals I was seeing for some of my competitors at the time was just so gross and so misleading that I felt that if I was going to get involved in any fight that year, it was going to be that fight. And so I did.
It's interesting because, you know, you talk to analysts and people who are hip to the e-cig business and beat, as I am, or as I pretend to be. They say that the bigger companies are sort of okay with legislation like this, that the big guys sort of are fine with getting rid of flavors and sort of muscling out the smaller people like you. Is that the sense you're getting? Like, how much pressure do you feel from, like, you know, the big players in the game, meaning the Blues or the, you know, I think RJ Reynolds has came out with their own views. It's not really
their views. Heavy. Yeah.
Like, so a company like Blue, say, how, you know, are you feeling pressure from them, or is it pretty much just like a free for all and you can sort of operate in your own sphere and they're not really an issue?
Well, I think with a company like mine, we're nimble and we're adaptable. And so if it has to be the case that we can limit ourselves down to just a tobacco or menthol flavor, then we'll make 8 tobacco flavors and 8 menthol flavors, and they'll be varying, you know.
Right.
The thing is, if that's their strong suit to kind of push out the small guys, I don't think that's very strong, you know. I'm not saying, you know, let's find something more to attack onto us, but at the same time, that's the least of my worries with these new regulations and seeing what their lobbyists might be able to do. The interesting thing is that it's still independents like Enjoy that are just as big as someone like Blue. So there's going to be a lot of butting heads, then lobbyists, and then also within, you know, how they're going to try to, you know, keep their product relevant and within these kind of regulations and what they might do. So that's kind of a gift and a curse, I guess.
Now, you mentioned really briefly, you were like, the certain amount of flavors that they approve. What are on the docket as, like, being okay?
I'm sure that they'll want just the menthol and just the tobacco.
Right.
But, you know, there's so many different kinds of menthol and tobacco, you know, that there could be within regular cigarette forms. So why not just mimic that and come up with 8 different tobaccos and menthols so everyone's happy?
Right, and this is maybe a question for both of you guys since Chris did a little bit of investigating, but is there any kind of response that people have been giving to them on whether it's your behalf or company on behalf of companies like yourself that are basically saying, well, listen, this is already being marketed, towards adults. You're already taking advertising off of, like, countertops and things like that. Like, is there any kind of pushback to be like, listen, this is we're doing it strictly because this is what our customer base wants?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a large sense of that. And also, you know, it's just like there's just so many things that you're going through when you're trying to quit smoking. I know, myself included, my girlfriend. You try all sorts of weird things. So, like, if something like, if something provably can get someone to quit, say it's cherry flavor or vanilla or whatever it might be, I mean, is that really a thing you want to bar? Is that like Bloomberg's end game is to get people continuing to smoking? I mean, that's how I see the bill in its form.
I mean, it really, to me, it's very interesting because the science is so up in the air. And rather than, I mean, the FDA has kicked down their decision. They were supposed to rule on electronic cigarettes in the spring, and then they've kicked that back to October now. And so people really are wringing their hands, trying to figure out, you know, it's like both sets of the data tend to be biased. You have like the tobacco control people who are throwing biased data. You have the trade groups that are throwing biased data. There's no real long-term scientific study of it. So, yeah, it is interesting because, you know, it's helped a lot of people quit smoking. I mean, I've talked to those people, and those people are happy to go to, you know, boring city council hearings and wait for hours to, you know, make that known that that means a lot to them. On the other hand, like, you have these people who have been fighting the tobacco companies their whole lives who basically just see this as just an extension of that culture. But it is an interesting, you know, to me it's ripe with promise as an issue for reporting because there are so many questions that are up in the air.
Well, I think also what's interesting is that I don't think a lot of people, I didn't realize this until speaking to you, Jesse, about, you know, you don't think about, you know, because cigarettes our entire life has always come from some giant, you know, tobacco corporation. And, you know, and since this being such a new technology, it's really interesting to know that there are independent companies like yourself that are doing it. And I'm just wondering, I guess my question was more along the lines of, Is there something that you can do, or other companies that are like yourself who don't have that type of, you know, lobbying, you know, the ability to lobby, you know, big influential political people? What kind of steps can you guys take? Like, are you actively doing anything, or are you kind of in a wait and see type of mode?
Oh, no, absolutely not. I'm actually very involved with the CFAA. You know, I was at their last hearing, or the NYC Health hearing in May 2nd to review these ordinances in the first bill. And, you know, at the end of the day, they said, you know what, we'll strike everything from e-cigarettes off this bill. And we thought that was the end of it. I get an email earlier this week from Greg Connolly over at CFAA, and it's back on. And it seems like it's even more aggressive this time. You know, the language is even more towards the front of the reading. So for us, it looks like you have to keep on fighting. And, you know, what we can do effectively is, you know, I might be in a better position than a lot of companies where I'm in New York City and I kind of already have the press contacts where I can, you know, kind of, you know, point Greg Connolly to those contacts and then also talk to them myself and then get that media support and get that support out there, because what happens next is the people who really like this stuff, the vapors, you know, they do show up to these meetings, as you just mentioned, and they will be heard, and they're very, very into their devices. So, I mean, you know, you try to take a nicotine away from someone and you just see what happens, you know. It makes them very edgy. So, you know, we have what I would say a very active audience.
Right. You gave me a really good quote that I used in my story yesterday about this encounter you had with a teenager who is too young to be using tobacco products, by the way. But would you mind sharing that anecdote with us on the air?
Oh, yeah. So I was in this bodega, and I was just dropping off my shipment to, it was actually 719 Fulton Street, anyone listening in that area. what happened was this kid was like, hey, man, you got a cigarette, or, you know, whatever the cool talk is now. But he basically, you know, I was like, no, you know, I own this company. It's kind of the antithesis of what you're asking me for. And he said, you know, I don't smoke robot dicks, and I just never heard it before. I was like, ha, you know, it's really interesting.
Did you ask him where he came? I mean, was that just an original?
Is that the lingo on the streets?
That's like a Bill Cosby's kids say the darndest thing sort of thing, or is that like actual slang?
I felt like I was in that mode, just like, yeah, the kid did just say a darn thing. But what was interesting about that is it did slap me back to when I was 15, and I could see myself asking the same question and then also giving the same reply, you know, fuck you, give me a real cigarette, you know, like, that's all I want. And so, you know, my impression is that there probably is a contingency of kids who are smoking, and it may even be something that's kind of perpetuated by their parents, or like, listen, you can't smoke real cigarettes. Here, have a e-cigarette.
Right.
And that inherently makes them less cool.
For me, you know, when people tell me they're about to order one for their kid, I kind of go, well, you know, I'm not your parent, so I can't tell you no, but at the same time, I wish you didn't, but what can you do?
Well,
consider the alternative.
And I am kind of curious about this, because, you know, we always joke about Bloomberg and the nanny state and how he's, like, supposedly looking out for health. Doesn't this seem to be kind of counterintuitive to that? I mean, granted, there isn't a much scientific data to say whether or not it's necessarily healthy for you, per se, but e-cigarettes definitely are healthier than regular cigarettes. Wouldn't this be kind of counterintuitive to what he's been pushing as a mayor this whole time from a health perspective?
Oh, it's just extremely radical to all I think that I know about him. I'm sorry, hold on, I'm on the street.
Hawking e-cigarettes to kids, right?
I'm going to briefly interject. I think this language is coming from the health department and the people, you know, working in these sort of associations that are tobacco control associations. Anything they associate, you know, the dogma is that anything that's associated with tobacco, aka nicotine, is bad. So they're going to, you know, dot their I's and cross their T's, which is what they do in this bill language, to make sure that that's not available to people. They're gonna make people jump through as many hoops as possible. But I mean, again, it's like they didn't need to make this language that specific. So it is interesting that they sort of really do go after e-cigs in the manner they do, given that there really isn't a whole lot of science and how controversial the products really are.
It just makes you kind of wonder for what reason? Like, who really benefits from this bill? And, right. and you know, I mean,
right? I mean, they can point.
I don't think it's anything crazy, but at the same time,
the smoking ban has been, you know, in terms of saving New Yorkers' lives, it's arguably done that. It's done a very good job of doing that, and so they can use those statistics legitimately and say, you know, we can prove that by not allowing people to smoke in bars and closed places and parks and so on and so forth, we are helping your health. With e-cigarettes, that claim is dubious at best. So this is, you mm-hmm. know, to me, it's a bit of an overreach. If I'm a skeptical observer, it's certainly an overreach. But yeah, that's just my take on it.
So then as we're wrapping things up, Jesse, what do you see the end game of this being? Do you think it passes? Do you think it passes with that legislation, or maybe passes without that legislation, or that bit of the bill?
Language, yeah.
Language.
Well, I think the biggest problem with this bill, and, you know, we've all reviewed this and we've looked at it, and a real problem I see is it's attached to another bill that's not really an e-cigarette bill. So it's kind of like a mishmash. Will it go through? Probably not. I mean, they're going to listen to our statements, and I hope that they're with a clear mind that day and agree with what they did on May 2nd and just shut it down. If they want to resurrect the bill, I say make it all on one thing. Make it just strictly about e-cigarettes and find a real solution that kind of accommodates the growing market, but, you know, also a product that they really don't have enough information on to kind of put in a classification as cigarettes.
Yep. That's my, I mean, I don't know. I can't say whether or not it's going to go through, but that is, I mean, even if you can't stand e-cigarettes, it's like they're very different from tobacco products in that they probably should have their own piece of legislation if you're going to try and legislate them.
Well, isn't that kind of a sneaky move to like bury it in another piece
how,
of bill?
But lots of
I mean,
of
that's
bills.
Like how everything's earmarked. I know that's how people like get money for their states because
sure.
they earmark it. But
that's
like,
how legislation works. But
shouldn't right. that be, I mean, I don't know if that's the focus of anyone's fight, but isn't that should just be like, yo, it should be separately, but it's separate from that bill, but also like, isn't anyone kind of just like questioning like why now and why is this being kind of buried when it seems to be something that should be a much larger topic?
Well, they are now, and you know, Bloomberg's leaving office soon, so he's trying, and he said, I'm doing everything I can to advance my agenda in the precious few days that I have, and that goes from, you know, getting this rezoning on the east side
right, right.
to e-cigarettes to he's fighting a soda ban in court. So he's you know, still full steam ahead on everything, and I think this proves that, you know, that he's still clearly fighting with this mindset of he's going to change policy, everything else sort of be damned. And sometimes it works and sometimes it comes off as really brash and, you know, ill-informed.
Well, guys, I need a cigarette after all that.
I need a robot dick after that.
Yeah.
Well, right. Well, yeah, I got to get back. I was actually I'm watching over a model shoot that we're doing on the street here. So,
Well.
Great talking to you guys.
The life of e-cigarettes.
Yeah,
hanging out with models.
Start your own e-cig company, kids. Yeah. This is what you do. You hang out on with models on busy boulevards.
Jesse, I want to thank you very much for taking the time. I know this is a topic that we've explored in the past and probably will explore again, but thank you for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks, man.
All right. Thanks, Derek, Chris. Take care, guys.
Take care.
Appreciate it.
Jesse Gaddis, the owner of Bedford Slims, talking about e-cigarette legislation in the Bloomberg administration.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of shoving it through like he likes to do.
You know, I am a fair reporter. But you know, it's, I calls it like I sees it.
Well, he put in bike lanes. That's all. That's like when you start talking about everything Bloomberg's done bad.
And honestly, the smoking ban is huge and it started a wave of other smoking legislation throughout the country and the world that he deserves credit for.
Yeah, but, and I like, you know, being able to wear the same clothes the next night because I went to a place that
like Derek's doing
like
right
what
now.
I'm doing right now, so I don't have to worry about, you know, it smelling like
Derek
smoke.
Derek enjoys wearing clothing until it meshes in with his skin,
it
and then
falls
I have to cut it off of him.
But well, Chris, so this is a good show.
Yeah,
this was a banger. We had some high quality guests today.
Banger.
I love when Marissa and Joe stop by. Although this is the first time they've been on this particular station.
They're very nice people.
They are very nice people. And Jesse's a very nice guy. So, until next week.
On a positive note.
Yes. It's always positive here on Nothing Urgent. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.